ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music and more.
What happened this week is the goalpost got moved incredibly, because all of a sudden we got a call on Tuesday from the manager to say that there was a chance they were negotiating a release with the Tigers and he would be available virtually now. Well, that's something we had to give consideration.
That's Phil Gus Gould, Channel 9 pundit and Canterbury football boss, explaining that West's Tiger star, Lachlan Galvin, wants to join the Bulldogs and they are eager to have him. Gould's running commentary on this young talent has been fascinating. He has publicly praised Galvin. He has denied they were interested in him, but left the door open just a little and ultimately secured him. Good fortune, brilliant manoeuvring. How's this being received in NRL circles? How will the Dogs fit him into their system? I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily. Brayton Astor is a former Canterbury Premiership player. He's a player-manager himself. He is the host of Fox Sports NRL 360. This story's fascinating. And when Lachlan Galvin sensationally announced he was not re-signing with the Tigers, we all sort of wondered where he might land. And Phil Gould was adamant it would not be at the Dogs in that sort of way that he saw it. What do you think changed? Because you were someone from the outset who thought Canterbury was definitely in play.
It's an interesting one. It is intriguing because, you know, Gus was pretty outspoken about where he stood, where the club stood on it, and pretty much gave the indication that they weren't interested.
Yeah, but we've got other plans at the Bulldogs, all right? We've got a pathway system, we've got kids coming through, and never in my wildest imagination would I have thought a Lachlan Galvin will ever come on the market, particularly not in this way or in this soon. So we've got other plans. I've got other kids there that are in the embryo stage of their career, and we're developing them as well. So it's not something you can put on me right now.
For me, it was about a month ago. I'm in a position where I'm a player agent, which, I mean, I've only got 4 or 5 clients, but I'm an ex-player, and now I work in the media. I'm probably as close to a journalist that I get. So I get a lot of information, you know, from all different angles, whether it's in here at NRL 360, whether it's I'm negotiating with clubs through players, and then obviously I know how it works being an ex-player. So I started putting all the pieces of the puzzle together. I spoke to people at Parramatta who said that the Lachlan Galvin deal, because that was really, everyone thought he was going there. Dylan Brown's moving on to go to Newcastle. It's a good fit. Moses is the half. It'd be great to play next to him. They'd complement each other. Isaac Moses is both of their agent. So it all made sense. But then the noise went quiet at Para. I spoke to a few people there and they said, no, the deal isn't done here. It's far from done. And then I heard that Parramatta were interested in a couple other 5'8". So I'm thinking, okay, this is really interesting. And then they wouldn't re-sign Sexton at the Dogs. They're coming first. Sexton's in career best form. He couldn't play any better. You know, like, it was like, hang on, why aren't they signing Sexton? Parramatta haven't confirmed or are telling me that they're not even close to confirming Galvin. So hang on, is Gus throwing everyone off here? But, you know, really working hard behind closed doors. And I'm thinking, this has to be the case. If you also looked at Galvin and why he wanted to leave the Tigers, he wanted better coaching, he wanted to be at a better club, he wants to win a premiership, and it's not all about the money. And I'm thinking, well, if that's the case, Parramatta are going to throw a lot more money than the Bulldogs, but if he's actually looking to move on for all those reasons, and that's genuinely why, and then they're not re-signing Sexton, Parra haven't really confirmed or said that they're even close to him, then he has to be talking to the Bulldogs. This was about a month ago. You know, a big thing for me, Stacky, was the Dogs. I talked to a lot of, you know, hierarchy at all the different clubs. I'm obviously really connected with the Dogs and the Roosters because I played there for so long at both clubs. And you know, I talked to Nick a lot and I talked to Adam, the chairman of the Dogs, a lot. I tried to ring Adam and he didn't call me back, which is really unusual. And then he usually, after, because they all watch 360. They say they don't, but they do. And after every show, if we're either off the mark or you know, they want to clarify something, they call me straight away. Well, when I kind of went out there and made that call about the Dogs and Galvin, the silence was deafening from the Bulldogs, which confirmed to me that they were.
I'm fascinated by Gould and the fact that he's been on the record as a huge admirer of Galvin for some time.
Lachlan Galvin might be the best teenage footballer I've ever seen.
Come again?
Might be the best teenage footballer I've ever seen.
I mean, to describe him as the best teenage player he'd ever seen last
year. That's crazy.
Well, I mean, was this just a masterful long-term play by such a seasoned power broker?
He's a genius. Like, you can criticise Gus and say it was deceitful. Some people may even suggest that he's a, you know, he's a liar. You know, really, like, but, you know, like, I look at it like this, and because I know kind of the ins and outs of the game and, you know, head of football management, all that. He has executed this behind closed doors when no one saw it coming, and he's landed the big fish. So, you know, you've got to respect that. You know, if you listen to what he says, he said they weren't interested, but he'll leave a door open to interest down the track.
Yeah, I don't think I used the term wasn't interested. What I said it was that we'd stick to our program. When he first told the West Tigers he wasn't going to play in 2027, he was still contracted till the end of 26. So as far as we knew, he would be playing with the Tigers again in 2026. Even if we wanted to sign him for 2027, we couldn't negotiate until the 1st of November this year. That's 18 months to hang around wondering whether or not you've got a player.
Or he'll say, he's not worth $1 million. You know, if I was him, I'd sign for less at a better club. You know, he was actually saying that, right, along the way. The call that he was the best prodigy that he's ever seen, like, we're talking about the likes of Freddie Fittler.
Brad Fittler was not doing this at that age. Brad Fittler was a completely different player. Brad Fittler was playing in the centres at that age. He was a ball runner with a wicked sidestep and a physical frame. And, you know, Brad Fittler didn't become a playmaker until he was 25, 26.
Laurie Daly, Bradley Clyde, Jonathan Thurston, Greg Inglis, Jarryd Hayne. Like, no disrespect to Galvin, but they are all ahead of him at this point in their careers. Now, like, really, in terms of, you know, their expectation and their talent. And not only was he kind of working behind the scenes, he was really wrapping him up and giving him confidence and selling him to, I suppose, the dream of coming to the Dogs. It's masterful. It's Gus at his best. That's why he's in the position that he's in. But it obviously gets a lot of people, you know, frustrated as well, though. But you got to see it for what it is and what he's been able to do. It's, he's in a league of his own, Gus.
Understandably, there's been a lot of focus on his role in this. I wonder whether someone like yourself, who has to walk, as I said, a tightrope of wearing the hats of broadcaster and player rep simultaneously, does it worry you about the flow-on consequences?
It's a tough one for me to talk about because, being honest, I get targeted for the conflict of interest by certain sections of the media. You know, I've got, as I said, 5 clients. There's no real benefit for me because I'm not an agent who's searching for more. I'm happy with the ones that I've got. It doesn't gain me any interest by critiquing players or even talking about my own because I have to. It's not something I'm comfortable with, you know. And then you see Gus. So, you know, like, I've got no issue with it, though. This is the thing. Like, I think more other people have a bigger issue than me with it. Gus, I respect him. I say it every week. One, if not the brightest mind in the game. You know, there is a fine line of probably running a footy club and being involved in negotiations and kind of being on a show and having opinions about players he's going to sign. So it is a bit of a grey area, but I can't really get... I don't want to get into it because it's just too political for me and it doesn't impact my life, so... You know, I'm fine with it, and I know people have an issue with me. So all I'll say is I can see how people would not like it and would think that it's, I don't know, it's a bit of a grey area.
The next part of this is how this might transform the NRL this season. Canterbury top of the table, halves pairing in Sexton and Burton who are flourishing. What would Galvin's acquisition mean for that? And is this the sort of move that can catapult them to a premiership?
I think it could catapult them to a premiership and it can also do the opposite. So it's going to be very interesting to see how they handle it. You know, the Canterbury is such a brotherhood. You can see that. Like, they've, you know, a few years ago, I was like, where is their DNA? They've lost it. They've got it back.
It's mad. The boys are mad. The vibes at the club's mad. Obviously, winning helps, but the whole culture is just mad from New South Wales Cup upwards.
And that's because of Gus and Serrato. Like, they have it back. And you can see every player, they look like best mates. Saying they'd die for each other is a big call, but they would, you know, they'd do anything for each other. You can see that with their effort areas and this year how, in their defence. They've built that culture back. The positive is you're getting one of the, like Gus said, one of the best players coming through at the moment to join their club for a long period of time. And if you look at the long game, it's a great buy regardless, you know, because this kid is, he's a special talent and he'll only get better.
Honestly, Lachlan Galvin by the time he has retired, God willing, touch wood, and I don't want to mock him, Lachlan Galvin will earn more money out of rugby league than any player in history.
Under the coaching of Serrato and Gus, then he'll thrive. So it's great for the long term. The concern is the short term. What do they do straight away? You know, do they play him in first grade straight away? Do they put him at 14? Do they play him in the halves? That's the dilemma they've got now. Does that unsettle the group? Is there a player that's going to miss out? Who are they going to drop? Will that impact a brotherhood where supposedly, you know, they prioritise each other and put the team first, you know, and that's the mentality that they've built, this sort of little dynasty that they're creating at the moment. So is this a team first mentality? Is it a team first decision? That's what's going to really, I suppose, what we're all going to keep our eyes on over the next sort of few weeks to months. But in terms of what I would do, the less you unsettle this group, the better. The only way I can think of it is, you know, you maybe start him at 14 for the first few weeks, or if you're going to make a big call, I'd leave Sexton at 7, put him at 5'8", and I'd put Burton at fullback. The reason I say that, Burton, he's a runner. You know, he's not a game organiser. He's not a talker. Burton can play like an extra half at fullback and come in and support and play like another 6 or 7, you know, with Galvin and Sexton. The talk of moving Crichton, I just wouldn't do. Crichton's, if he's not the best centre in the game, he's in the top two. Defensively, they are so good, and he's the best defensive centre in the competition. So I think that would unsettle the team more. I think if you put him at 7 in front of Sexton, that would really unsettle the group, and it's such a key position, and Sexton doing so well so far, it could throw them off. So if I was the coach, I'd probably do that before anything else.
It is a fascinating story. Thanks for chopping it up with us, Braith. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Headlines, a quick Origin update. And Blues centre Stephen Crichton has been seen limping from training with his left thigh heavily strapped and iced. He's not the only injury concern for New South Wales. Payne Haas is still struggling with a quad issue. While in Queensland, Daly Cherry-Evans has rubbished suggestions that he's got an overly cosy relationship with referee Ashley Klein. In the AFL, everyone's talking about Ross Lyon v Damien Hardwick. Lyon described the Gold Coast like this.
You know, I'm a little bit concerned. They're chock full of talent, aren't they? The AFL Nepo baby.
The Suns then beat St Kilda, and their coach, Damien Hardwick, clapped back.
Oh, it's a little bit disrespectful, I think. Trust me, I've been at, you know, Richmond, and I've come to the Gold Coast. We don't get a lot. What probably St Kilda should do is just make sure they focus on their own backyard instead of trying to bring everyone else down. Yeah, 13,000 people here today.
Gold Coast sit third on the ladder after the victory. Matilda, Steph Catley, Caitlin Ford and Kyra Cooney-Cross have won the Women's Champions League with Arsenal after knocking over Barcelona. The biggest celebration in North London, though, that was left to Tottenham, who rolled out a wild party in honour of Spurs' Europa League title. Ange Postecoglou typically brought the vibes at the end of his second year in charge.
And I'll tell you something, I'll leave you with this. All the best television series, Season 3 is better than Season 2.
They did come back to earth somewhat in the Premier League across the weekend, losing 4-1 to Brighton. Will Ange stay in his job? We're going to find out soon. Oscar Piastri's F1 Championship lead has been trimmed to 3 points after he finished third at the Monaco Grand Prix. Lando Norris won from Charles Leclerc in the Australian. Max Verstappen was fourth and addressed the new regulations designed to spice up the iconic but somewhat dull race. F1 made it compulsory to pit twice in the hope of creating the capacity for more lead changes and excitement. It resulted in teams often having one driver go slowly, deliberately in order to buy their teammate more time and space, making for even less excitement. Here's Verstappen's 2 cents.
Yeah, but you can't race here anyway, so it doesn't matter what you do. One stop, 10 stops. Yeah, you just, I mean, even at the end, right? I was in the lead, but my tyres were completely gone and you still can't pass.
And 14-time French Open winner Rafa Nadal has been farewelled at Roland Garros as part of day one of the tournament. Roger Federer, Novak Djokovic and Andy Murray were among those paying tribute at centre court with some emotional scenes.
For me, mean a lot that you are, all of you, here. But you gave me some hard time on court, honestly, no. But I really enjoy it a lot, pushing myself to the limit every single day to compete with all of you.
I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily, produced by Poppy Penny. Thanks to Channel 9, the Six Tackles with Gus podcast, Fox Sports, Sky Sports and Tottenham FC for the extra audio used in this episode.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.